where you want to be as a consumer. You would want one place that you can really trust with your health data. We're a long way away from that.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
My guest today is Bertie Odendel, who's the Global Head of Transformation for Therapeutic Areas for Boehringer Ingelheim. Welcome, Bertie. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi, Andre, and thank you for having me, and thank you for the invitation to talk about a topic that I'm really so passionate about.
Then maybe we could start by you telling us a bit about your background and how you ended up in this role.
I have a pharmacy business background, and over the last three decades of my career, I've primarily focused on pharma marketing, commercial leadership roles at a country and also at a global level. Now, digital health has always been one of my key interests and passions. And a few years ago, I had the opportunity to spend half a year at an innovation lab at one of the big tech players in Silicon Valley. And this was an absolute amazing, incredible learning experience, and also with a lot of growth to spend some time in this environment where the culture and the mindset has just been so different to what I was used to in pharma.
Yeah.
And moving back into a role into pharma, you know, after this time, it really led me into a role focusing on driving digital and cultural transformation in the pharma space, because I believe this is one of the key ingredients for future success of our total industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about your role now? What do you do in that role?
My role is actually quite diverse in nature, and it really ranges from the strategic dimension elements of defining and shaping how to focus our efforts in considering large number of different opportunities within the digital health space based on how we see and expect the future of health to unfold, and also to shape mindset and culture, and as well as embracing new ways of working to set ourselves up for future success. So it's really a broad range of topics, but very, very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the interesting area to be in. One area that I find really interesting is this whole thing around big tech and healthcare and what that means for pharma, because there's been a lot of developments in this space quite recently with, you know, Apple, for example, with their FDA-approved ECG and cardiac monitoring and their diabetes monitoring in the watch. In fact, I read something about Tim Cook being asked what his legacy should be for Apple, and he said, better health. So that shows intention. And then Microsoft is another one where they were stated that cancer and other biological systems are essentially information processing systems. And so they've launched this program to solve cancer in the next decade. And then, of course, where would we be without Amazon, who's working for an end-to-end healthcare solution? And they've already got, you know, healthcare insurance, supply chain, pharmacies. They're making cancer vaccines and a whole lot more. And then, of course, Google also have an R&D facility in San Francisco for drugs, and they've been acquiring biotech and health wearables, and they've also released diagnostics that outperform physicians in interpreting scans in oncology. So this is really the tip of the iceberg. Taking all of this and everything else that's going on that you're seeing firsthand, what do you think this means for the pharma industry?
Andre, yes, there's a lot happening in this space from the big tech side. And
yeah,
I think, you know, it's absolutely one could expect that big tech will move more and more into the healthcare space. And undoubtedly, it's fair to assume that in the future, they will play a key role in healthcare, helping consumers to stay healthy and, you know, particularly also not just in the caring, but also on the prevention end, which we think will attract quite a lot of attention going forward, especially if we look at the time frame going up to 2030. The question, although one see them play in the space, you know, we know that pharma and drug development has been a very specialized, space, and also quite complicated to navigate. And pharma's got years of experience there. So the big question I have in my mind, though, is if this will end up in a space where we will have really direct competition, because I believe that each of our industries, whether it's technology on the one end, whether it's pharma on the other, bring unique capabilities at the table. And I think the winning recipe might rather be focusing on building really strong, powerful, and effective partnerships.
Yeah.
So I think you really need this approach from both ends, working together hand in hand to fully bring the potential that we see technology can really deliver in healthcare to its fullest, a value.
And
and it's not only big tech only, because if you look at the plethora and the large number of startups who are driving innovation in the space, we should also think about them playing roles. So, and if I look at technology firms, the big value that I see they bring is, you know, of course they've got the ability to computing power and their ability to deal with large amounts of data, and also their proximity to the consumer. You've mentioned earlier on our new consumers of healthcare and the younger generations and their demands, and how they definitely will step forward as the as key decision makers in the future. And this is where they have a very close proximity. And then, of course, there's data. And, where is all of this sitting ultimately? And how does it enable innovation in this space? And, who's able to deal with it? And this is where, tech brings the value. But I think pharma brings the strong knowledge and the specialist knowledge around, the drug development space. Really interacting with the various stakeholders that's needed to succeed in the space. And this is where I think probably partnerships will bring a lot of value.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen pretty much most, including your company, companies collaborate with some of the big tech companies. My concern is, could big tech be using it as a learning experience to then move more and more into that space? But I agree, if the intention was good, it would be a win-win for both.
Absolutely. I think, yes, there are collaborations, and yes, there's a lot of data shared in the process. Whether this is used as a learning curve, I think all are learning. I think pharma's learning.
Yes, I suppose too, yes.
As well as big tech, we're all learning together. And I think here, it most likely will require both to really get together and say, how do we jointly win in this space? Because I doubt that anyone on its own, I don't see these industries, completely competing in a fierce way in the same space. I think there are some elements of overlap that will develop, but there would still be significant opportunity for further partnerships. And then of course, I think both these industries are having some real trust issues with the consumer. And
definitely,
I think
this is
the other big piece that one also need to consider going forward.
That's a good point. What do you think are the biggest challenges that pharma will face in trying to get on board with big tech, and as big tech move more and more into this drug R&D and production space?
I think undoubtedly mindset and culture. Pharma is used to function in a very, very regulated space, and we've simply been molded in that way, how we think, how we tick, how we work. If you look at the tech area and the tech landscape, they move much, much faster, and they really embrace much more iterative approaches, learning along the way, putting strong emphasis on learning from failure. And of course, they're very extremely customer-centric. And, you know, just look at some of the players, like Amazon is very customer-centric. If you look at Apple, they are very customer-centric. If you just look at their customer service approach. Pharma, I think, is still working hard on how to become better focusing on the patient and also becoming faster at delivering innovation. Now, we have been traditionally very slow at this. Accepting failure as the normal part of business, one would imagine, you know, if you consider the low probability just at the start of development of any compound, that this should be part of us in pharma in terms of just accepting failure. But I still see we struggle with this and making it part of, you know, day-to-day mindset. And you know, this would also be relevant not only when we think about, you know, areas we potentially directly compete, but also in partnerships. At the time I've spent with this innovation lab in Silicon Valley, I've often heard, you know, frustration on their side, you know, where they feel completely hindered by the mindset and culture that they see in firms and industries they need to collaborate with, because they simply just want to move forward differently.
I guess you're right, though, because we are so constrained with regulations that we're a lot more cautious as an industry than big tech, for example, sure. So what about the future of healthcare data? I mean, you know, it's often in EMR systems like Epic in the US, but now that Amazon and Google are in that space, it's interesting because they will have a lot of data once the more they move into that space. We do see these kind of grassroots movements with patient groups who are actually creating these blockchain apps to own their own data and control who uses it on a case-by-case basis. But who do we trust? I mean, it's very interesting that big tech and pharma do have trust issues. And of course, Google was famously have fired two chief ethics officers when they brought things to their attention. And we all know about the whole Facebook, now Meta, you know, Cambridge Analytica stuff. And even I think Apple I trust probably the most. I use Amazon all the time, but I actually was really let down a year ago because one of the sellers started stalking me. They had my home address from Amazon, and it took a while for Amazon to actually move on it. So even though I complained quite a lot about it, story for another podcast. So this kind of brings me to that whole healthcare data and trust. You know, do people trust big tech with their data? Do they trust pharma with their data? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the largest challenges we faced or facing. If, you know, if we really want to move the needle on innovation and digital health, then it's all reliant on good data and having the data and having trust in providing that data. I think the last couple of years, we've seen definitely an awareness on the consumer end around where the data is going, who's got access, and how is it being used. I think you've had that experience. You see many, and I also have become very conscious of, you know, where my data goes, where does it, et cetera. And consumers will definitely want to have this control going forward. And then, of course, if you look at the big players and many players in the space, they don't really have clear data strategies. And it's something that is a hurdle. And even some of the big players are challenged here in terms of not having solid strategies in place. And before we have, you know, these gaps closed and being able to connect different data sources and also ensure their interoperability, you know, this will remain one of our biggest issues. You've mentioned trust. So who do I trust with my health data? You know, I think this is also another key aspect. And I mentioned before that both pharma as well as big tech is probably not here in the best place in terms of having consumer trust with their data. Yeah. And technology space is working hard at addressing that. I think you know, every time you listen to some of the keynotes from Apple, you know, it is really a lot of this is being placed on, you know, data privacy and trust. So they're working hard at establishing it. I think in pharma is also working hard at establishing the consumer and winning the consumer trust, but we both have still a long way to go. And then where the trust is probably more at this point is sitting on the healthcare provider end. If you look at, you know, healthcare providers like physicians, like hospitals, that's where I think consumers are probably a little bit more at ease with their data being at, but that is not bringing us into a space where where the dots are connecting. And you know, the data, which is in a way which we can truly add value. So this is a space that still need to still evolve a lot forward. And I think then here again, effective partnerships through all these players, how we can connect the dots and then win the consumer trust. Because I think this, you know, if you think about where you want to be as a consumer, you would want one place that you can really trust with your health data, and we all wear so many different wearables today that you know it's going there. I can trust then for the guidance I need for all my healthcare needs, but we're a long way away from that.
Data and trust are two key issues in the whole thing. And what about where it all takes place? You know, is it going to be smart home? Where's all the data going to be? Is it smart home dashboards? Like, I've mentioned this a few times, but in other podcasts, but one of my friends is an architect and building homes in London that have AI in the mirror, in the bathroom mirror, to detect, you know, micro changes in the face and body that are indicative of illness. They have urine and feces analyses in the toilet. I mean, those are expensive homes, but the technology will become much more mainstream over time. So there's that, but then the smart watch, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the watch and the phone. Where do you think all of this is going?
It's definitely growing. I think the hurdles is currently cost in terms of a really broad adoption. We do see, you know, certain populations already, but I think most of the developed world, you see people already wearing some sort of a sensor, and the sensor landscape is absolutely exploding, and then more and more in smart homes, and most of us already have some element of a smart home. You know, whether it's just starting out with basic smart elements in a home, but it is moving in that direction. And I think if you look at the healthcare applications, it's still maybe a little bit pricey. Technology is growing and it's becoming less and less expensive, and as these become, you know, more used, it will certainly be the space where it all happens. And I think this is the only way it can really scale as well, if we have sensors that are embedded. The other big piece, Andre, is that it should be all automatically happening in the background, because, you know, if we don't have data that's collected automatically and it requires effort, it's a big hurdle. But so the space is evolving. There's lots happening. And then, of course, the other thing that's intriguing to me is the metaverse, because I think that will open up. But still there, I think the hardware will be expensive in the beginning. But that would be the next level, which we really go to in order to move the space forward.
Yeah. It's very interesting when you think about the pharmaceutical business model is still kind of a pay-per-pill model. And with all of these innovations, particularly with smart, you know, diagnostics, et cetera, that we're seeing, it feels like a lot of the big markets will shrink, because we will be catching people with oncology, diabetes, et cetera, much earlier, which is great for patient outcomes. But it does mean that the drug markets will shrink. And then we've got competition from digital therapeutics, which don't have side effects of drugs, and nanobots going into the blood to target cancer and cholesterol, et cetera. So do you think that, I mean, I'm thinking of a lot of other industries where, you know, Rolls-Royce, which was a bit like pharma in as much as it was a pay-per-product kind of pay-per-car, pay-per-pill, and they have shifted their business model to a subscription model, which is really interesting for a car company, but they've had their highest revenue ever by doing that. And then, of course, Adobe did that many, many years ago. And there's a whole heap of different you know, ecosystem platforms like Best Buy, they were really starting to go down, and they moved from basically selling to an ecosystem platform. Have you heard of pharma trying to address their business model challenges and really look at new business models to incorporate?
I think there are a number of players that are actively looking at this aspect. And maybe if one take a step back and look at some of the published material and some of the hypotheses that are being formed on how healthcare spending is likely to evolve over the next couple of years, I think it's fair to assume that overall healthcare spending probably likely to marginally grow in the next 2-3 decades. But the amount that's actually spent on drugs is probably unlikely to grow even further. Perhaps, I think, at best, even remain at a constant. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of the value where most currently is sitting actually in care, most likely shifting into new pools generating value. And one sees this in a number of publications postulating about these new pools of value. So in pharma, I think a number of players are looking at what could these new value pools look like and how do we align ourselves in order to tap more into some of this this new value that could exist there. And absolutely. But the biggest hurdle, though, I think, is that I see on the pharma end is probably that many senior leaders in our industry are perhaps not at the point where they believe it's high time to act.
Yes, I think I see the same thing, yes.
This is probably the biggest hurdle, but I think the signs are there, the writing is on the wall, we see value shifting, we see we need to address business models, whether it is, you know, if you just think about a pharma space where it's not going to grow in total value. But on the other end, if you would think about how AI could impact the rate of innovation in that space, and you alluded to that right in the beginning, you know, it's fair to assume that it will happen much faster as we go along. And it will become more and more challenging to differentiate the one innovation from the next. And how do you leverage then the full value, the full package, you know, that you deliver value to the consumer? That will require a different mindset, different business model on how you approach this. And it certainly will require much, much more thought. But we need to get our leaders, you know, to embrace this, because I think this is where our biggest hurdle is, as I mentioned.
Yeah, and I think it's partially because of the way everything is set up, where they're trying to get shareholder value for the next quarter, basically. So it's all a little bit short-term thinking in some ways with some leaders, because they aren't going to be in the job in a few years' time, and they've really got a short-term view because they're not really looking at the overall long-term view of where things are going. And maybe because we're shielded by some things with a lot of the measures that are taken that, you know, increase price or other things, they're not seeing it as much. So we'll see. What are your thoughts on where big tech could potentially disrupt pharma the most, and what do you think pharma should do about it?
This is really an interesting one. And now it's my belief. I think the one space where I think the future of health will be the most attractive will be this space, which whoever occupies the space, connecting the consumer, the future consumer of healthcare, with the healthcare provider space. Mm-hmm. Now, it will need to be someone which a consumer trusts. If I think about myself and fast forward, or any healthcare consumer in the next 10, 15, 20 years, you would want, through your wearables, to connect with one provider you trust. And that's the place where you would let all your healthcare data go to, whether you collect it in your smart home. And you want that provider which you trust to track and monitor your data, connect the dots, generate the insights, and then connect you with the kind of service, the intervention you need at the right time, exactly when you need it. Yeah. Now, this is a space playing on this level where you can connect the consumer with the rest of the provider space, which is, by the way, becoming more and more fragmented as we go along. There are so many providers out there. Can you imagine the complexity for a consumer? Because as consumers, we want a simple, you know, you want it simple, you want to go to one place. Now, this is where I think probably most of the value in the future will be generated, the one that actually fills this gap. I think this is where big tech could disrupt pharma the most, is stepping into this role, because all the providers, whether you're a provider or a drug, you know, service, you will become dependent on this concierge service that is there in the middle, connecting you to the consumer, and everyone will be at their mercy. And this is probably the space where I think has got the highest potential to really disrupt pharma, because pharma is also pushing quite strongly to get closer to the consumer and stepping, you know, closer to win trust. And one don't want to be just relegated to simply a provider of medication or drugs at the end. You want to actually provide more of a comprehensive service. And this is the space that is probably where most of the tension will lie if one fast forward into the future of health.
It's interesting. There is a company that I first came across in about 2012 called Q Health. And they had a system of little cubes that you could do, like a nasal swab, saliva, urine, blood, and it would stick it in the cube. You had a different cube for different types of swabs, but it would then diagnose what was going on, and then it would connect them with the doctor and the prescription and the pharmacy, and they did all of this. They didn't get FDA approval at the time, but they have now because of COVID. So COVID really accelerated them. I don't think they're as comprehensive as you're talking, but there are some companies that are venture capital funded that are really looking at doing that sort of stuff. So it is interesting to see where that will go.
Absolutely. Very, very exciting space. And in my mind, probably one that will capture most value going forward.
But it's, you know, it's a big endeavor to do that. It would be huge. Yeah. Interesting. Well, thank you so much. This is one of the most interesting podcasts. So much for your time today. I love this topic. I love musing about where things are going, because there's so many different things that are happening at such a big space. So I think we may even need to do a part two on this.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the invitation. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about also a topic that I'm quite passionate about. So Andre, look forward to the next time.
Thanks. Me too. And if any listeners have any thoughts or questions or suggestions for a part two on this topic, just email me at abates@eularis.com, and we will come up with new topics that you suggest. Thank you again so much, Bertie. Such an interesting discussion. Really, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.